There are two kinds of people in this world, those who live with shame and those who die from it.
Happy spooky season and happy Halloween, and welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that brings you all the updates on what you should read based off of the book talk recommendations if you are a busy young professional like us. I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. And today we have a very special guest with us. Avery Coffee is another book and movie creator on the internet. She specializes in Black horror. So we are having her on today to discuss that very topic. Avery, do you want to tell people where they can find your accounts?
I would absolutely love to. I am the host of the Unbound and Rewound Horror Podcast, which you can find anywhere you stream your podcast, like this one you're listening to right now. You can also find me on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Substack newsletters at Your Horror Podcast. That is Your Horror Podcast, because it's where you get all your horror needs.
Awesome. And the book today is been really popular for specifically October. It is called Lone Women by Victor Laval. In the book, main character Adelaide has this sort of dark secret, and the book is set in sort of the settler period of the United States. So it's post-slavery, but pre what we would think of as modern America. And she's a Black woman who moves from her sort of settlement area of other Black farmers to Montana. And she carries this sort of dark secret with her, which she keeps in a trunk throughout the whole book. We're not really sure what it is, why she's keeping it secret, but there are all these sort of strange happenings in Montana as she meets people, tries to survive, and deals with this dark secret.
And her parents die in the first few pages of the book.
Very graphically.
Yes. This is not your Little House on the Prairie. This is... It's the West gone very wrong. So, kind of interesting. Did you guys find reviews from the internet that you would like to share?
I did, of course. Mine is a 1-star review, and it's short and sweet, so I would love to go first. It is, "This is a do not finish, which should have been a do not start. Had to quit before it killed my brain cells."
No.
Yeah, I was damn, that's a savage review.
Jeez.
Judging their brain cells.
I was if they think this book kills brain cells, they should read some of the other books we've read, but.
Okay, I'll read a 4-star review. It's from Storygraph. It says, "Signed up for horror and stayed for the cozy female homesteading vibes. I really liked the historical elements throughout. Love a girl squad cast that supports each other. And there's a horrific monster that is occasionally murdering people. So really, what's not to love here? But seriously, Laval is able to convey the sparse isolation of early 20th century Montana in a way that doesn't feel like empty words. I did think that the supporting characters didn't have a clear arc at the halfway point, which made the middle feel a little muddled and random at times. It felt like everything came together at the end, but a little quicker than I would have liked, but I did feel satisfied with it." I also stayed for the cozy female homesteading vibes.
I liked the female homesteading vibes.
Yeah, we love a found family girl gang.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Avery, give your review and then I'll give mine.
Yeah, I have a 1-star review. Very dramatic. Okay, .. So I admit, I thought this book was historical fiction. However, once I realized it was supposed to be horror, I jumped on board with it. .. And was extremely disappointed. It should have been a historical fiction, honestly. ... It wasn't slightly scary. And what was up with the random lesbian sex scene? What the hell? That's gold.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really outing herself there.
We love homophobic reviewers here.
Yeah.
Though I will say the random lesbian sex scene was a little out of left
field. It was random. Correct.
It was random. I wasn't mad at it, but it was random.
There were a lot of random points in this story, in my opinion.
There were a lot of random perspective changes, which is mm-hmm. how we end up getting the lesbian sex scene.
Yeah. Because, like, for 50% of the book, it's one perspective, and then you get to, like, this quote-unquote part two section, and then it just all hell breaks loose. Each chapter's a new perspective, and you're like, okay.
Okay, cool. Well, have Casey read her review, and then we can get into it.
I read my review.
Or you mean Catherine, sorry.
Wow.
I'm not used to there being four people. I'm getting confused.
Confused with the two people you see every week.
Sorry. I just woke up from a nap.
Well, mine's short and sweet. It's a 1-star review on Goodreads. And it's just, wait, what? ... My response to this entire book.
Yep.
Fair.
Okay, well, overall, Goodreads users average out to a 3.73 out of 5 rating, and Amazon averages out to a 4.1 out of 5-star rating. So, before we get into discussion, what did you guys end up giving the book for a star rating?
I ended up giving it a 3. I thought, so this is one of our questions later, but I'll just say it now. I have read The Changeling by Victor Laval. And I thought he had, like, really beautiful writing in that book, but I didn't overall think the plot, like, effectively delivered the story. So I was really excited for this book because I knew it was written later, and so I thought maybe, like, you know, this could be, like, a better version of that, and I really liked his writing, so I was really excited. But I had sort of similar problems with this book where I thought there were moments that were really good, but overall, like, I thought it could have been a lot scarier. I thought there were moments of tension and mystery that could have been drawn out a lot more to make, like, the whole book filled with, like, more tension and more, like, fear. And, like, I really liked the whole, like, female homesteader part. But that's why, Avery, I really liked your review, is because I was like, he should just not have made this a horror book unless he wanted to fully commit to make it scary. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, I felt like the plot was, like, a little too winding and lacked some of that, like, motor of tension.
I also gave it 3 stars. I thought the pacing just got kind of slow at some points for me. And I feel like I enjoyed it most once I got past, like, the 50% mark. And then I was enjoying it. And then, like, my review said the end was kind of like, oh my god, it's over. And I was like, wait, you should have written more, because I liked that part. I found the book kind of predictable, sorry. And I wish there was more horror and suspense in it than there was. Also, I agree there. Overall, though, like, the writing is really great, and I'm not mad I read it. So, solid 3.
Yeah, surprisingly, I'm going to go on the 3 train. And did not plan this. I put my Goodreads rating today, so it was before this podcast recording. Also gave it 3 stars. I liked the writing. And surprisingly, to the inverse of Caitlin, I really liked the suspense in the first 50% of the book. And that was
I did too. The second half of the book lost me.
I'm sorry, yeah. You know, I'm the action girly.
So I really liked the first 50%, and it took me a while to finish the rest of it, like 3 weeks about. So I guess I liked where we were going with the mysterious trunk filled with something that's obviously evil or whatever we make of it. And then once we got past that, it was kind of like really random, because we were adding a lot of perspectives in. And so, I mean, like, I loved the writing style and I liked the short chapters. I think that's, like, a huge, like, plus for this book, but I have to give it a 3 because it did lose me a bit toward the end.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with Catherine on the stance of liking the first half of it versus the last half. One thing I don't like about Goodreads is that you can't do half stars, and I'm a half star person. So it's like if
we
I
do could, on this podcast,
and I'm grateful for that because it's not like I can't rate it a 3 stars, but I can't rate it a 4 stars either. I really love the way that Victor Laval writes his Black characters into any sort of timeline. And it's not necessarily about their Blackness. Like, it's not about racism, especially with this story. It could have very well been just another post-slavery or even like mid-slavery story where they're experiencing the real life racism. But instead, we have a very independent, free Black woman in her 30s who is able to be on her own and make a living for herself and make friends in a new town that she, you know, just moved to. So I really like that aspect of the story. And I know that he does that a lot with his other stories as well. I haven't read The Changeling, but I did attend his panel at New York Comic Con. It's nice to see him put so much thought and effort into his stories. However, I am not a historical like reader. I struggle with my attention span and everything. This one was good. Like, it grasped my attention in the first part. But the lack of suspense, because it dropped off, I feel like, in the second part where you're introduced to all these different perspectives. I think third person perspective also is just my least favorite, especially because it tends to be a little more scattered and not as organized. So I found myself just really, really wanting to learn more about Adelaide and hearing more of her perspective. But instead, you're hearing about Job. And like, why do I want to hear about Job? This is supposed to be about women.
Yeah, it snaps.
Yes, period.
This is a woman's story. I'm sorry.
It is. And I do want to say, I'm still willing to give Victor Laval more chances because I think he's a male writer who also writes female characters really well. Mm. You know, there's none of like the boobs boobing boobily like that you see in other writers. And all of his characters are just like super complex. Also, I love a complicated villain, and I loved that in this story, the villain is not who you immediately suspect it will be, but I was ultimately let down. I felt like the climax could have been reached at like a much higher point of tension. And so I didn't think it like served the full horror experience.
Mm-hmm. And like Caitlin said, I do think the twists were very predictable. Mm-hmm. I think one thing, so with the review that I read, the lesbian sex scene, the more that I think about it, it's not that I have a problem with it being in there at all. Because if there's one thing about me, I just love gay things in horror. But it's like, I almost want to say that he did it more so to be like, just so you all know, they are gay, because it's like there were subtexts throughout once you meet those women. Yeah, but it's like, unless you're familiar with like queer women and like sapphic fiction, I feel like you may not pick up on those things very well. So I almost want to say that he did that more so as an indicator. So it's like, does that speak more so on like what he did, or more so on the readers and how they feel about it, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, it definitely does. Yeah, I mean, I'd hate to spend so much time in our non-spoiler section just talking about the sex scene, because especially because I really liked the characters and I thought they were really great characters. But it was very interesting to have such an erotic moment in a book that was otherwise like not super erotic. Like there's another sex scene with Adelaide, and that scene is like very transactional almost. Like it's very like we have needs, and like the lesbian sex scene was between a couple who was in love with each other. So they were very different.
Okay, so we can get into that more in the spoiler section, but let's get through real quick our normal non-spoiler questions. Do you believe the book was more plot or character driven?
You know, I'm going to make an argument for character, because this whole book really hinges on Adelaide, and there are parts of the book where she's sort of out of control, but obviously the big spoiler, like major plot point is between her and whatever's in the trunk, and that was very character driven.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it is more character driven by multiple characters as well, because when you introduce new perspectives, you introduce them as a narrator and a character that's driving the story. And each of those characters, their internal monologues are all about making decisions based off of like their own character development and their own personalities and trying to protect themselves. Because like, honestly, there isn't much of a plot per se without the characters. So I think it is more character driven.
Yeah, I am going to go with character driven too, on top of everything else that you all said. There are so many characters. Like, I feel like it was very much, though Adelaide was the main character, and though not a lot of characters were developed either, that's another thing, another conversation. Though they were not developed as much as I would like them to be, I feel like you still see a lot more of them in this story versus had it been more plot driven.
I'm going to agree with y'all on character driven. Like, the whole story is about Adelaide and her secret and this trauma she's kind of working through by running, or not working through, by running to Montana. So I agree. No arguments needed, Casey.
Wow. Crazy. Okay. So we've already kind of answered this question, or at least I have. But have you read other books by the author?
No.
I have not.
Nope. It's just you, Casey.
I'm the expert. Wow.
I just tend to read lady authors.
Okay, so we can move on. what about the pacing? I feel like this is like a really big question in this book. How long did it take you to read, and how did you feel about how it was paced?
I'm literally looking up my Goodreads.
Yeah, so am I.
Because I'm pretty, yeah, I started it over a month ago on September 13th, and I finished it mid-October. So it took me a while to finish it.
It actually, so it's short. It's like 300 pages. So I think I actually finished it in like 3 days. It didn't take me that long. That being said, I did not love the pacing. I felt like the first half of the book was like markedly different from the second half. I preferred the first half. Caitlin has already said she prefers the second half. And so, yeah, I will echo Catherine again and say I kind of blew through the first half, and the second half I just didn't really enjoy as much. I felt like it was a lot slower.
Goodreads says it took me almost a week. I had to look because I read this a while ago, because I jumped right into spooky season and read them all real fast. But yeah, I think it was almost too easy to put down in some spots, like because of how Catherine mentioned there were short chapters. And then it was kind of broken into three parts. And so I think it was easy at the like end of a part to kind of just like put it down for a while and then pick up something else and come back to it. Like, and that's not a bad thing. It just, like, it made for an interesting pace. And I think we all had different opinions on which part was slow paced, but we all think there was a slow paced part in the book. So yeah, it's just kind of like it's an average pace, I guess.
Well, it definitely took me a month to read this, and I barely even finished it, if I have to be honest. The pacing really was a problem for me, and I don't know if it's because I was reading it on Kindle Reader or if it's the short chapters, but it's like I would read five chapters and still feel like I wasn't making enough progress in the book. And like you were saying, Caitlin, it was easy to put down and even easier to not pick back up. And I feel terrible saying these things. But it once you get to a certain point, for me, you spend so much time invested in Adelaide and learning about who she is. And the focus is really on her. And then there's a switch and it's no longer, while all of the characters that you do focus on are intertwined within Adelaide's narrative and, you know, what she has going on in her life in Montana, it's still just like, there's a big problem here and you want us to stop focusing on it so that we can learn about Grace and Sam and Job. Like, no, I want to get back to the real plot. So I think every time the story just shifted and we stopped learning about Adelaide or even Birdie, I was interested in learning about Birdie too. But anytime we were not learning about them, I said, okay, I'm bored now.
I agree with that.
No, Avery, that's the exact same experience I had with taking a month, and I had the actual hard copy of the book. So,
and Catherine reads books in like 2 hours.
I read books at an insane rate.
She'll sit in a layover in the airport and read like a whole book. So
you do that.
Has done that multiple times.
Well, to be fair, one of the only reasons why I made progress on this book is I had a nail appointment and I was getting my toes like a pedicure. And so I was kind of forced to do something other than like watching TV. So I had to read the book.
That'll do it.
Mm. Okay. Not relatable. Would you watch a movie or TV show about the book?
I want our horror entertainment expert to answer first, because this is the opinion that I'm most interested in.
Oh, I would definitely watch this on the big screen. I think because of how many perspectives there are, it's like, I do think the story works better as like a TV show versus a book or a movie, because with a TV show, if you look at like Midnight Mass, for example, I'm not going to say the streaming platform currently, but if you look at Midnight Mass, you follow a bunch of different perspectives, and there's one center problem, but you don't feel like, it doesn't feel uneven. You don't feel like you're learning less about one person. It all feels very balanced. And so I would be interested to see that. And also just to see, like, I love a good creature feature. And I feel like this would make a really good one, similar to Lovecraft Country when that show was out. That was really good. And that's what this kind of reminded me of, which people have compared Victor Laval to H.P. Lovecraft and just his style of writing. So, yeah, I would watch it rather than read it, if I have to say.
I would kind of agree. Yeah. To me, it gave Special series, like 6-part series. I feel like I would have eaten it up. I don't think it would have felt as slow. And I also think they could have created a really interesting world as far as like singing and character. I think I really would have enjoyed it as a special series.
I agree. It kind of gives me Westworld vibes. I don't know if anyone else has watched Westworld. I don't know. I think the American West and like pioneer times have this grip on Americans. And it's like, I think it would make a great like TV series. I liked the characters. I think it would be a better excuse to get into some of their backgrounds instead of switching perspectives so much in the book. And you could flesh it out a little more. So, I mean, I'm the same. I think I'd watch it instead of read it, honestly.
can always be like character-based episodes where you have like one episode named Adelaide and then one episode named Grace or something like that, where you go in depth about their backstory and you see it rather than it kind of be explained to about it. Yeah, I think that could be interesting. I'm curious about Sam and Grace. Like those two of the characters I'm very curious about.
I'd love to know how every character ended up there.
Yes.
Yeah. So
it reminded me. Oh, Catherine, you're going.
Like 6-part miniseries, TV show.
I feel like I kind of wanted it to be like Orange is the New Black. Because they obviously start with Piper and then, but like what makes the show good is you get the backstory of all the other characters. And that's kind of what this felt like, is I really liked Adelaide, like way better than Piper. But what would have made this book really, really good, I think, is if you could have seen more, or like the balance between like characters felt more equitable.
Yeah, and I do feel like if you have no like reference for what Montana looks like, this book is probably, you're like, so they're standing in a field.
Well, it's kind of what Montana looks like, not gonna lie.
I find that part of the country extremely beautiful, but
it's very beautiful, but a lot of it is fields.
That's true. I'm from Missouri. I like fields. I don't know. Okay. Well,
before we move on to the spoiler section. Avery, I wanted to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the reason we wanted to talk to you is because you specifically like consume horror and talk about horror, and Black horror and queer horror. How did you feel like this book like was in conversation with other pieces of horror? As like a horror aficionado, how did you think about it, like in that sort of genre?
Well, I do think, as we talked about before, the lack of horror, there are horror elements with the, I don't want to say too much because spoilers, but there were horror elements, you know, that definitely made this horror, so I feel like the lack of kind of skewed my perspective a bit. But overall, I think even just like isolation horror is something that I'm really big on. I mean, it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love it, because it's such a realistic sort of horror genre or subgenre. And so when, you know, this, the setting of Montana, and also just like the lack of transportation, the lack of electricity, the lack of communication because of the time that we're currently in the story, it's, you're reading Adelaide's perspective and even like Grace and Sam and what they go through. It's like, I can't imagine being them and like just having to experience what I'm currently experiencing without being able to call help just like on a phone or with a neighbor right next to me. Like, there is several miles between Adelaide and Grace and their neighbors, which is crazy to think about. And on top of that, like winter and just the threats of like weather as well, and how that can play into horror, on top of isolation. So I think that was the biggest element to me that stood out, that I was like, this is horrifying. And also, I mean, the Black experience too, but because Victor Laval often just writes his characters, they just so happen to be Black. You have a mix of that in here, without denying the historical significance of what's going on. So I think that, and just, you have powerful white people, in this town who are power hungry. Like, they mask things very well. And that is possibly the biggest scare to me. So, yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I wish, so there's, two kinds of threats. It's like the social threat of like, do your neighbors accept you? And there's also like the like literal survival threat of like, do I have food to eat? And there are parts in the book where Adelaide is really like worried about having enough food. And I wish those kind of threats were like really like parsed out more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the setting is almost a character in itself because it is such mm-hmm. a present threat and because it is talked about so much. Mm. I like that. Isolation horror. I'd never heard that term.
Yeah. Also, there is a scene, this is not a spoiler, but there is a scene where an Asian character is referred to as not American, even though they were born in America. And I was like, that is so real. That was such like a poignant moment.
And it addresses like the indigenous people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, everyone's here.
Yeah, the focus is honestly on a lot of, there are a lot of marginalized characters in this story, and the focus is very much on them, which I enjoyed, because I think when you do have historical fiction, no matter what the extent is to that historical factor, you often, it's just not from the lens that Victor wrote this story from. So it was interesting to see this kind of world that he built, that took parts of our real life world and the history of it and fantasy.
Yeah, it's like there are all these, at the time period, like outskirts people who Montana is the one place where they can have a slice of the American dream. It's the only place where they have this opportunity. So they all end up together. And it's kind of cool how that worked out. But, okay, I want to talk about all that more. First, we need to give our busy girl rating, which I almost forgot because I was getting so excited about the conversation. So, busy girl rating for our guests. We like to look at how was the pacing, which we talked about, and how long it took you to read. How did it fit in your schedule as a working professional? And like, would you recommend another person who maybe leads a busy life to take the time to put the effort into the book? So I can go first. I think it's a busy girl's story. I think the pacing is what kind of sticks it there. It's so up and down. And like Avery said, like almost too, it's too easy to put down and almost too easy to not pick back up at some points. Not mad I read it. If you like suspense and like maybe historical fiction, this is a great option. But I think for me, it's a 3.
I'm going to be mean. Ooh. I'm going to give it a 2. I think the characters are really the highlight of this book, but I feel like the plot did disappoint me. And I felt like all the elements of like greatness were there, but it ultimately didn't deliver it. And so I think if you want to read a horror novel, there are better options. I think if you want to read a historical fiction novel, there are better options. And so for me, the fact that like I think you could spend your time better is what like bumps it down a little bit to a 2.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I feel like I giving it a 3 is probably where I'm at. It's like, yeah, it took me a month to read it, and that's unusual for me, which is, yeah, a lot to say. Yeah. It's, yeah, just what Casey said. Reiterate that. Snaps to that.
I don't know. I may say 3. I think for people who have patience, which with a book, I lack patience. So with people who have patience, who have busy schedules, and who aren't pressured to finish a book, this could definitely be a 3 for them. I think, like, for me, I live in New York, so I don't have to worry about driving. I can read while I'm on the go. And that's what really helped me read this book, is just by being able to read it on the train. And New York is such a busy place already. So it's like me being a busy girl, I managed to do it, though I was impatient. So I'm going to say 3.
Which is like shocking, because this book is 274 pages, and like Avery, we have read like 800 page books in the span of a day. Like, or at least I have.
Okay. Catherine has. Not
speak
me.
For yourself, psychopath.
Yeah. No,
that's actually scary.
Caitlin, you have read for 12 hours straight one book, and I can name it.
Yeah, I have. I still don't know if I finished it in a day.
But still, like 274 pages is like on the low end of a lot of our books.
That's true.
It is.
We read a lot of long fantasy books.
Okay. Oh. Well, that brings us to the best part of any episode. We are at our spoiler section. That means we are going to get into the details of the book. We're going to talk about everything. So if you have any interest in reading this book, you should stop listening now and go pick it up because we are going to spoil it. Question number one. The intro scenes of this book are really compelling. They're about Adelaide burning down her parents' farm with her parents' bodies inside. And it's very mysterious. We don't totally understand what has happened or what is happening. All we know is that she's fleeing, and the only thing she has is this like mega heavy trunk. What did you think about the setting, this intro, the time, period, location, etc.?
I loved it. It was, you know, kind of during the women's rights movement still, like women were still marginalized, and obviously her character being Black, she was still marginalized, and she was running from what appeared to be murder, and you're like, oh my God, like it was a great amount of like mystery right at the beginning, and then you're also like, what's in this trunk? And your head's running through it all while she's kind of, you're getting her backstory a little bit, piece by piece, as she's making her journey. And I thought it was a decent hook. Like, I think it slowed down once she got through that initial travel part for me. But like, it drew me in.
Yeah, I'm a historical fiction nut. And I'm also like, I love history. I've always loved history. So this time period is very interesting because like nationally women didn't get the right to vote until like 1920, so with the 19th amendment, and that's not to say like all women, that was majority white women got the right to vote at that time, so this was pre that even. But the places that got the right to vote quicker, the states were like Wyoming, Montana, and the Wild West, because it was whoever survived, essentially. There's this huge survival instinct in these areas where even when you think of like Jamestown and stuff like that, a lot of the men died during that time. So the women were the ones suddenly owning land. And that was the first instance of women owning land. So it's very interesting to see that play out in this book of like, no, like Adelaide was totally like, she could get a piece of land in Wyoming because they just needed people to settle it, because it was this wild territory that they couldn't colonize, settle. And so it's very interesting of a time period to be talking about this, because it's like, obviously there's still a lot of prejudice, and we haven't solved a lot of the issues. We still haven't today, but we haven't solved a lot of the issues past that time period. So it's a very interesting place to put Adelaide in. But then she also grew up in this community that was insular, even within her insular family, and it was predominantly Black. And then suddenly she's not in that community anymore and has to kind of face the world through that lens. So I thought I loved the setting, and I loved the location descriptors that Victor Laval goes through.
Yeah, so the first part that really grabbed me was like, A, obviously her parents' death, because it sets the stage for this mystery. But also, like, it felt to me like she was leaving someplace that was very safe. Like, she comes from this community of Black farmers and Black landowners where they had sort of like this community, and Adelaide is going out into the wider world. And I think kind of the subtext of that is like, she's going out into like places where like white people have all the power. And so I was really like interested in that element of like, how will that affect her journey? So I think that's part of what contributed to the suspense in the beginning. Because I was like, she has left this like very safe place where she's been an accepted member of the community, and she's now entering out into this wild world where like slavery is over, but she's a woman and she's Black, and like we don't really know how that will impact her as she tries to make it on her own. And so I was like excited and also incredibly scared for her.
Yeah, and I think when we think of the 1920s and pre-1920s, post-1920s, when it like pertains to Black people, we, at least for me and the discussions I have, it's usually North versus South. Like, you don't think of the West at all. And so I think making that the setting was actually so smart, because it offers a lot of context, a lot of historical context that people may not even consider. And I happened to learn some things within the story that I didn't know before. And, you know, so having her, as you were saying, in this community of all Black people, and then bringing her out of that like a fish out of water, which is sometimes the opposite experience that other Southern fiction has as it pertains to Black people. It was like a flip of the narrative that I enjoyed, that I was intrigued by, on top of just the intrigue of what was going on when the story opened up. And so it really drew me in, and I was enticed by what could possibly happen when she reaches her destination and leaves this place of comfort.
Yeah. And also, like, on that Wild West point, the fact that, like, the way race was portrayed very differently than it is in the South, I thought was very interesting, because he really sort of, like, encompassed and embraced this idea of, like, the Wild West, and you don't really know anyone, and so, like, anyone can kind of be there. And there's this, like, almost, like, Island of Misfits, like, perspective, where all of these people who have had experiences or identities that aren't accepted in more, like, easily settled places congregate here because they need the second chance. And that was something that I also thought was, like, really great for a horror novel, because it's, like, all these people with pasts. Like, that's such a great, like, point to jump off of, is, like, people with history.
Well, and legally, it's, like, the one place in the country where single women, no matter their race, could put down roots and own land at this point. So that's how it drew these kind of, like, misfits, which I found really interesting. And, like, you're not going to discriminate when your neighbor 6 miles away is the only thing keeping you alive, you know?
Yeah. And so I thought that was super interesting.
Yeah, and on just, like, the way that race and gender were in this story, it was interesting altogether, which I already kind of said. But I think Adelaide's interactions with other people, particularly white people in this story, she was aware of the otherness that she has compared to her counterparts. However, because she was on the run, it's like her reactions weren't what you expected them to be. So, like, there was one point where I think maybe she had just reached Montana, and she realized that everyone was just, like, looking past her. They were, like, looking at her, but looking through her. And that's such an invisible nothingness feeling that, if this book had taken place in the South, for example, or in the North, the reaction that Adelaide would have had would have been complete opposite. But she was grateful because she's on the run. And it's also just like, there's like a, I almost want to say content to it. Like, she knows that it can happen. So she's not bothered by the chance that it will happen, if that makes sense.
Well, and she, like, wants to be invisible in this. Yeah. And she's like, I have bigger problems than racist white people. Great. Let's move on.
Yeah. Well, because even the first question she asks is like, is there any other people like me? And they're like, oh yeah, Birdie. And then that's it. So like, that's the other person, like the only other Black woman in the area for miles and miles and miles. But it's super interesting because then as the book progresses, she craves social interaction and craves like human interaction. So it's like, she starts off with like, I need to be invisible, but then starts to try to assimilate into the town, which goes slightly awry throughout it. But I thought that was kind of interesting because it, like, she went out there and specifically chose Montana because of a newspaper clipping that said like, oh yeah, women can come out here and thrive and own their own land. And I was so curious about that newspaper clipping throughout of it because I was just like, is that based in reality? Because I could totally see like some sort of propaganda from the US government of like, come and settle this land.
The weather's great.
Yeah, you only get 26 inches of snow in one bout. It's fine.
So for a tiny bit of context, I remember when I was in school and we always did like the Oregon Trail, you know, concept, always did like tons of activities around the Oregon Trail. They, because the state and the person who at that time like owned whatever land was considered the state, wanted people to settle there, they would publish propaganda about how great it was. And it would be like blatant lies. Like Adelaide ponders this because she reads this posting about how great the weather is in Montana. And then obviously we all know Montana is like, I mean, as a Texan, dare I say a hellscape of snow
and windy. And so
that was something that in the book I thought was kind of like a realistic little thing, because that's how they got people without internet to like come to this like unforeseen land by making it seem so wonderful. And then you buy the land and then you're like, oh shit, it's actually terrible here. And that's kind of what happens to Adelaide.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm in Missouri. I went to an elementary school named for Lewis and Clark. Like, it just, you're right. Like, we always learned how wondrous the West was, like how amazing like this exploration factor was. And like, I love that she got there and was kind of like, shit. Like, what have I done? Like, even if I heat my house, the smoke comes in and suffocates me, kind of thing.
The guy that sold her the land was like, oh, there's a cabin on there and a well. And she gets there and it's dilapidated and she can't really trust the well, and she's miles and miles from a neighbor. And so it's like, oh, this is not what I thought it would be.
Then it snows and she's like, finally, fresh water. I was like, oh my God.
And without a horse, it takes her like at least 20 chapters before she gets a horse.
Right. Yeah. People just kind of come to her, which was interesting. Like, it's just such a different, you don't think about, like we've been saying, like that part of the Western history of the isolation and how, you know, cowboys just roll through and that's your only interaction for the month or whatever. Like, it was a really interesting setting in a really interesting place for the like thematic gender discrimination, race discrimination to play out, because it was like, huh, never looked at it in this specific situation.
I also really wanted to touch on Adelaide and her relationship with her mom, as we're talking about, well, we kind of got off of it for a second, but race and gender, because as you all were talking about, you know, she comes here to feel invisible, to be invisible, and to escape the you know, what she did. And then she's yearning for her mom, and she's yearning for the connection of another Black woman in general. And something that kept coming up was she would say, like, I can almost feel my mother's fingers on my scalp. And then when Birdie braids her hair, she gets those reminiscent feelings of when her mother would braid her hair for her. And I mean, I think that says more than one thing, but the biggest thing to me was just how like Black women find community within other Black women. And her immediate thought when she got to Montana was, are there any other Black people here, but particularly women? Because, you know, it's just like a sense of comfort, and she's in this uncomfortable feeling all around, not even just an uncomfortable place, but like she doesn't have any family anymore. She's just miles and miles away from that. And when she finally found Birdie and their whole exchange, and it was just, it's like, this is their first time meeting, but you wouldn't think that because there's already this just established like familiarity of just, I'm a Black woman, you're a Black woman, our experience, we are the same, let's help each other. And I liked that, the way that Victor captured that.
The fact that the first words out of Birdie's mouth were like, girl, your hair. That was so, like, I don't know, it made sense. And it was funny how that comment just made her feel at ease, because she was like, someone who gets me. And that, like, I would have been like, what'd you say about my hair? but no, like, she needed that comfort of someone understanding, like, her personal hygiene and stuff like that, that her other neighbors couldn't understand.
Yeah, and hair is a very large part of Black culture in general, but also just amongst Black women. Like, we will sit for at least 7 hours getting our hair done by another Black woman, and the whole time you're doing it, you're listening to music and you're talking about, you know, like your life, and it's just a whole bonding experience. And so it was just, wow, I really loved that that was included in this story, because her being the only other Black woman in the town could have also gone south, but it didn't.
It almost did,
but yeah. It didn't.
it was so interesting, because that scene was almost the most euphoric experience for Adelaide. Mm-hmm. The entire book was when Birdie was doing her hair, and she was like, I felt the urge to touch her ankles, and I felt like she was like my mother caressing my hair. And Fiona was obviously getting jealous because of that whole scenario, but it was literally, I mean, she has like sex with another man, and that wasn't as euphoric as having that kinship and having someone mm-hmm. help her. It was so, like, I really liked that scene.
Well,
that
and it's also the most anticipated, because she keeps mentioning, like, everybody says this woman is out here, but I haven't yeah. seen her yet. And so it's, like, the perfect, like, timing, the perfect way to meet. You're right. Like, it is kind of, like, the happiest moment in the book.
Well, speaking of Birdie, there's also some other lone women throughout this book that form this kind of kinship and found family, like Casey loves. So what did you think of some of the other supporting lone women characters, like Grace, Birdie, Fiona, and Grace's child Sam?
So, random point, which is incredibly not important, but my mom's name is Fiona, so I was predisposed to love Fiona, which I did. I loved the sense of independence you got from it, and like independence, but also kinship of like helping people and looking out for each other. My mom is also a teacher, so I related to a lot of the women in this book, just because I could feel for Grace, like trying to stick up for her child, trying to start a school, like being such a great teacher and like advocating, but like other people around her don't understand. Like I kind of loved all of their perspectives. However, I do think that they maybe could have been integrated into the story better. As the book went on, as like Avery has mentioned a few times, I felt like every time we got pulled away from Adelaide, there was like kind of like almost like something was taken away from the story. It didn't feel cohesive necessarily. And so I think that they all could have been woven into the book in a way that didn't feel so jarring. Like, I think maybe if Laval had told the whole story from Adelaide's perspective and woven in their backstories in a different way, I would have liked that more. But as characters, I loved them all.
Yeah, I loved all of the characters. And when they finally kind of like band together, I'm like, yes, girl gang. And like I said earlier, like I would love to know more about each of their past and how they ended up there. Like you kind of get it for Sam and Grace, but not totally. And I don't know.
Also, I'm sorry, random point to interject. The ghost of Grace's ex-husband is referenced so many times, and his ghost is referenced, but he never becomes a part of the story.
Well, she killed him.
But that's his ghost is there. His ghost is like an actual presence that Adelaide.
That's true.
He's still not like actually in the story.
It also, that's true. It's never really like discussed about Adelaide's ability to see ghosts.
Huh?
It's not really discussed very well.
I didn't pick up on her ability to see ghosts.
She saw him.
Yeah, it's like I think Sam can also see.
See, I just kind of thought it was like the kid saying, like, oh, you must have felt it too.
And do you remember when her and Fiona went to Glendale?
But didn't Fiona see them too?
Yeah, but like she was in proximity to Adelaide. So she saw the five men that may or may not have burned themselves.
I guess I never quite thought about it that way. I just kind of thought, oh, spooky.
Yeah, because it wasn't fully fleshed out and explained. Like I would have loved a paranormal aspect of this, like with ghosts and malicious ghosts almost, especially with Grace's husband.
Yeah, he was kind of just there to make the point that Grace killed her husband. Like this wholesome lady wasn't so wholesome.
Which is something I wished became more important, because I think we've all mentioned it like a few times, like this book kind of has this rich scene of like everyone here has a past, but that also creates the anxiety of like everyone here has a past, and do we really trust each other, and who is trustworthy? And so I felt like all of this doubt about who is trustworthy could have been made like a bigger tension point.
Okay, well, that actually leads into the next question. The Mudges. These people are kind of creepy in the beginning. The four blind boys and their mom, and then you find out they're not blind, they're scammers, and then you're like, oh shit, they're out to get Adelaide. What'd you think about the Mudges? And then Joab becomes like a pretty big character. Like, what did you think about that?
Hated them. I mean, it was odd that you had that separation between when you first meet them to when you meet them again. Because when you first meet them and then they just disappear, you're like, surely that's not all. And it isn't.
You kind of suspect Adelaide maybe did something.
Oh, I didn't. I definitely honestly thought that like they messed with her trunk and they learned the hard way that you shouldn't touch other people's stuff. Because obviously they have sticky fingers. I knew that I had a feeling we were going to see them again shortly, because she also took their stuff that wasn't their stuff. So yeah. And then when you did see them again, I thought something more was going to happen, more than what really happened. I think I don't know. I thought they were going to be like cold blooded murderers, which I guess they were, but like the biggest thing was just stealing stuff from people.
Well, like the mom was the scariest, and like once they reappeared, she just died. Like,
yeah.
So she was gone. Like,
I really wanted them to wreak more havoc than what they really did. And then they just, like the, I call him Job.
I've been calling him Job as well.
Okay. So Job and Delmas, which fun fact, my dad's name is Delmas. And this is the second, this is like the only other time I've ever heard of someone named Delmas.
That's funny.
So anyway.
Fiona and Delmas. Yeah.
Fiona and Delmas. But you have Job and Delmas who start working for the Reeds, and like they're development from where they first started to where they come to, I don't know, it just felt a little underwhelming for me. Yeah,
I completely agree. So when I first read The Mudges, I was hoping they were going to kind of play into this like ghostly theme. I kind of wanted, I'm not like necessarily that into paranormal stories, but like there's enough appearances of ghosts that I kind of wanted them to like play into that theme because they felt so evil to me. Like the whole time you feel really disconcerted by them. But I, Avery, I agree with you. That's why like the ultimate storyline kind of let me down because I think I was hoping for something a little bit more extreme, a little bit more climactic. And especially because Job ends up getting like a redemption arc, and even the redemption arc was not like,
I did not like redemption enough. Arc.
No.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, granted, his mom was like really sort of like the evil actor, but he murders like so many people, like including way more than his brother.
And yeah. And I can't like reconcile the fact that he's like 12 years old.
13. He turned 13.
When it's all because day. Sam is like, he's not that bad. And they're like, all right, go live your life, boy.
Like, yeah. I would not trust a child to give a child. Yeah.
I was terrified he was going to do something sinister to Sam in that last part. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually glad that didn't happen because I was like, I don't want to read about that. But
he just like, almost built it up like something bad was supposed to
I thought
to
he was going to like rape Sam. And I was like, thank God this child rape did not happen. Because
I was like, why did you catfish me with that? Like, I didn't want it to happen, but why did you like make it sound like it was?
It did read like that was going to happen.
He was being so creepy with Sam. And we had just found out that Sam was actually a girl who wants to be dressing in boys' clothes. Like, we're not really sure what that situation is, but like
is trans, basically
is trans, essentially, is what the idea is. And it's just this weird interaction between her, like them and Job, and I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? And then also like Delmas even getting a point of view, I was like, why are we giving him a point of view? Like, why are we giving Job a point of view? Like, I kind of got Job a little more than Delmas, but I was like, why?
I understood Delmas was there to contract Job or contrast Job, like to see the two different reactions to how they could have turned out from the situation, but also like I didn't need either of them, so
yeah, I thought they were a little like just a nudge too extraneous. Like, I could have learned enough from other people. Because I honestly didn't complain so much about like having Sam's perspective. I really liked Sam. But Job, I was like, maybe a little too much for me.
I will say, so when I referenced, I thought maybe Adelaide did something to the Mudges. I was at this point thinking the trunk thing was maybe like a Jekyll and Hyde situation, which I almost think I would have rathered, not that there was like a damn dragon in the trunk. So I was like, oh, while she was sleeping, did she do something evil, you know, like and not remember it? And I was kind of like, ooh, this could be interesting. And I was kind of let down that it wasn't that.
I will say to that, I like, one could argue that Elizabeth is Adelaide's anger, especially because as it's like so much deeply entrenched things. Like, okay, as a Black woman, anger is a very big thing, and it's been villainized a lot over history. And so because Elizabeth is this volatile, violent thing that has to be restrained and controlled and hidden from the world, and Adelaide is such a collected person overall. Like, you see her anger throughout the story, but it's all in her mind. It's very it's very well maintained, sometimes more than it really should be. And even when Elizabeth shows herself for the first time, not for the first time, but to the Mudges, it's like Adelaide almost acts relieved instead of like, oh my gosh, Elizabeth got out. So it's not like directly a Jekyll and Hyde situation, but I do think that Elizabeth is tied to that side of Adelaide that she tries to hide or that is not socially acceptable.
I love that. Yeah, I love that. Something I thought a lot about in the book was that Adelaide loves Elizabeth. And it's really obvious and you can really feel it. And she feels really terrible for the way that she has locked Elizabeth away and the way her parents wanted her to be. And it does feel almost social, like especially the way the book ends up sort of progressing, because Adelaide ends up telling these like trusted people, these other lone women, about Elizabeth. And Elizabeth becomes basically accepted by them. And so it does sort of like enhance that idea of that, like, Elizabeth is Adelaide's rage, because the people who really love and accept Adelaide, like, also love and accept Elizabeth.
And if you're going with the interpretation that it's her rage personified, what's most interesting is the person who's angriest about how she treated Elizabeth is the other Black woman. If that's your interpretation, it's the other Black woman saying, like, hey, why are you hiding this part of yourself? You know, like, that's very interesting to spin it that way.
Yeah, I did not think about it like that. But, like, the idea of twins, that kind of makes sense, where it's, like, one born after the other and, like, treating one as an other and treating one as something you need to hide. Like, that's super interesting to think
about. The fact that Mrs. Reed had some dragon child born that they killed.
But she also has tons of female rage. Like, she
is. I know,
is,
but I'm like,
advocating so hard for women. Like, she is trying to get these political gains. Like, she does not like to be, like, under her husband's.
And
she's like,
sad about the baby dying. So I guess it does carry the theme, but also. I don't know how I feel about that part.
Well, because Mr. Reed, you get his point of view too, and he was basically like, yeah, I wouldn't have done it if it weren't for my wife pushing me to do it, to kill the baby. It's like, oh, okay.
But that was a part I found super interesting, because when you get her perspective, she tells a different story. Mm-hmm. She says, I never got to see the baby's face. So they are telling different stories about the murder of their child, basically. Where she is like, I never got to see the child's face, and he is saying, I would never have done this without her reaction.
I just feel like that part of the story was an afterthought, and you got the weird vibe that she wanted to, like, keep Sam, but I think it could have added to, like, the horror suspense if you were taken into that creepy ass attic a little sooner and see, like, the crib and stuff. Like, I just feel like it was, like, thrown in at the end. I don't know.
No, I agree with that. I thought the suspense could have been drawn out. But also to the last point about it being about rage, your parents are who teach you how to act in society, and Adelaide's parents were the most influential people in making her hide
Elizabeth. A woman is a mule.
Yeah. And that was huge in the book. So
I feel like you just opened a whole new... I think I like the book better now, thinking about it that way. Like,
yeah,
my Jekyll and Hyde thing was a little simplistic, and now I'm like, wait, okay.
If there's one thing I know how to do, is look a little too deep into something.
I love it. Made me like it more, I think.
Yeah. Well, okay. So there is a lot of violence in this book, but a lot of it kind of comes out at the end. The beginning is kind of like Adelaide is moving to Wyoming. The middle is like there's tension, there's racial tension, there's gender tension, where there's like a more accepted part of the populace and there's a less accepted part, but everyone at that moment is willing to get along, which does not last, obviously. How did you feel about the character development of Mrs. Reed and what ends up happening with, like, her trying to lynch the lone women and the kidnapping, etc.?
She was a little sus.
I think... because when you look at all of the lone women in comparison to Mrs. Reed and the other busy bees. I mean, you don't see too much of the other busy bees, but from what I could infer, most of them are probably married, wealthy. And then you look at the lone women who are not married. Grace has a son and she is now a widow. You have queer women, you have women of color. And I think it speaks to white feminism, like the very surface level feminism of like, it doesn't take into consideration all women, only the majority, you know, the large majority of women who are white and straight and cis. And so I feel like that is almost what Mrs. Reed symbolizes in a way.
Yeah, that makes sense, because then they open the laundromat and that's like exactly what that is. Like, let's empower women, but not the women who are already doing this work.
It was like speaking the quiet part out loud, where it was just like, oh yeah, let's no longer go to the person who's not American, which is Fiona, even though she was like, I was born in Idaho, bitch. I love that line. That was a great line. And so it was just so interesting, because I was sus of her from the beginning, where she just basically ignored Adelaide and was just like, oh, I'm going to introduce everyone. I'm going to like greet everyone at the train station. I was like, and the busy bees, that name, I was like, I'm sus of that. I don't like that name. Like, I know that that's they're doing something shady over here. And then learning about her husband being like essentially a vigilante lyncher, it's like, okay. Sounds about right.
Yeah. So I thought Mrs. Reed was super interesting. I agree. She's like very white feminist. But also like as the book goes on, the way you see her kind of like turn against the other women and how she justifies that was really interesting, and the way she kind of like leveraged her power as like a wealthy white woman was very interesting, because she like wasn't correct. Like, she wants to blame everything on Adelaide and then demonizes these other women who've been members of their community. And the reason at first seems kind of unclear as to why she hates them, but it's also kind of like they just won't obey her. Like, there's that scene where
she's sort of jealous of their independence, I think.
Yes, like Grace slaps her, and which was an amazing scene. But you can kind of see the way she is like, I want power for people who are like me. And everything stops there.
Let's talk about her shitbag of a husband that she has to live with. And I feel like it's a large part of why she is the way she is.
But they're so in love, apparently.
Totally. You never see them together, but they're so in love.
Yeah.
When he's like playing cards with Bertie and Fiona, and then he's like, ah, man, those women, ew, you know. Oh, I hate him. And he teaches,
I wanted
like,
Bertie.
Right. You want him to die. And yeah, you teach, and he's teaching Job to be like him, and it's disgusting. And even Job, who is kind of a piece of shit and knows he's a piece of shit, is like, this dude is really evil.
Yeah,
I don't know. What do you think about the vigilante stranglers? It gave me major like the Ozarks. It gave me Ozarks vibes. The ball knobbers. That's what I was. Sorry, another Missouri reference. That's the vibes it gave me.
That is so funny, because it's this part of the book that gave me the most Southern vibes. Like, to me, this is what like Southern horror and like Black literature based in the South is kind of about these men who are like vigilante justice people, but are really just kind of like racists who go after marginalized people. And so, I mean, obviously I hated him. He and his wife are like the true villains of the story. But yeah, I was just kind of like, it gave me, this is the point in the book where I was like, this is giving me Southern.
Yeah.
Nah, you should look up the bald numbers in Missouri. You'll be like, yep. That's it. Running
yeah.
moonshine and vigilante justice that is not really justice.
I definitely agree with you, Casey, just in terms of like, this is what gave me the most Southern feel to the book. Because I don't know, I feel like the way that this town had been set up prior to this scene specifically, just the introduction of lynching, it caught me off guard, surprisingly enough. And I think, honestly, it added to the horror because you're like, this is a place where, I mean, not to discredit the fact that people are still prejudiced in this town. People still have their thoughts about, you know, queer people, Black people, Asian people. But, like, it's still, like, they're still able to walk freely to an extent, you know? Mm-hmm. And comfortably, it seems so. So then whenever Mr. Reed is like, first of all, he stops Job from shooting people. He's like, that's not the way. And he's like, instead, let's lynch them. That's insane. Yeah. Yeah. And he's also the first person to throw a slur around in the book mm-hmm. when he's talking about Fiona. And that was my red flag number one, honestly. Whenever he called Fiona whatever it was that he called her, I said, ew, okay, now you're on my shit list.
Well, because yeah. then Birdie was like, I should kill him. And I'm like, yes, you should.
When he's like, I want to play cards with, and then like uses, I don't remember what the slur was either, but it's like,
I remember it, but I'm not gonna say it.
Do you put two and two together here? You want to hang out with this person because you're a lonely old stupid man, but also yeah. you can't put aside your prejudice.
But that was a point with a lot of nuance, because I feel like that is the way we see Asian people portrayed, is like with an error of eroticism as the same way they're being subjugated. And that was very much his attitude in regards to Fiona. He was very interested in her. He always referenced her. I think he called Birdie by her name, but he never called Fiona by her name. But he wanted to be around Fiona. And that was like uncomfortable in a way that was definitely very intentional, because he was like an evil person who was not really seeing them as humans.
I also just thought Birdie and Fiona's relationship was strange. I mean, not to change the subject, but like,
no, please do.
I love the representation of queer people in the book, but the age gap is really what was bothering me.
Same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I was, I don't know, I was really drawn, I will say. I was torn.
Mm-hmm. It did kind of feel like they were like, oh, the only other queer woman in the entire state, we gotta be together.
Yeah. I also think that is part of an ongoing conversation of like queer couples like replicating problematic dynamics that are seen in heterosexual couples, where like stereotypically men in a heterosexual relationship have more money, they're older, they're more powerful, and they go with a partner who is younger, who has less social power, who also has less financial independence, and like the power dynamic in their relationship is really uneven. And so I'm honestly not sure what the intention of that was in Birdie and Fiona's relationship, because it felt like very similar in the sense that like there's one partner who has like a lot more like formed, is like a much older, much more institutionalized, has more financial independence kind of person. And then someone who
what you're saying is Birdie is a sugar mama.
Yeah, Birdie's a sugar mama, like literally. And I'm like, I don't know. I also liked Avery. Like, I don't know how I feel about that either. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know that I like approve of the dynamic that one partner has a lot more social power than the other.
Because it also felt like a, I don't want to use such a strong word as like infantilization, but whenever, so there's obviously a difference in the way that they act whenever Birdie is doing Adelaide's hair and Fiona's getting jealous, but also whenever they do get home after that whole thing and Fiona's crying, she fell to her knees and started crying. And then Birdie like picks her up and undresses her and explains like what she's wearing underneath her clothes, and it's like frilly and pink. And it just, I feel like in that moment, you could really understand the age difference or maturity difference, and the way that Birdie may have been like perceiving her. It was just, yeah, I'd much rather not read that.
Yeah, almost like the whole jealousy over like that whole scene with Adelaide and Birdie and Fiona watching, I was just like, I could do without that, honestly. Like, I liked the like Adelaide and Birdie like connecting part of it, but the whole Fiona feeling jealous the whole way home, and then like that, it just felt really awkward. And it does happen in real life, to not say that that doesn't happen, but every time that I see that happen in like pop culture or something like that, it's a song written about like a man 10 years a woman's age and like a heterosexual couple. Like, it's just, it felt uncomfortable almost. It felt like an emotional EQ kind of difference.
And the piece I kind of that gave me, I did also think the whole like buying her frilly panties to wear under her dress thing was ick. And but also like Birdie is really dismissive of Fiona's quest to find out what happened to her dad. She's kind of like, oh, she's running off again to a town, ghost town, to figure it out. You know, it's kind of like, if you really like, you would want her to empower her to find out her, like, what happened to her dad. Instead, she's just kind of like, meh, she's going off again. And is kind of like angry about it. I don't know. So there are like a lot of weird dynamics in that relationship. I still kind of like them because they're fun and quirky and they're her like girl gang. But
right. Because we also get a lot of positives about them and positives about their relationship, which I think is part of why I liked it, because it felt very authentic, where it's like, you don't love everything about them, but you also like love certain things about them.
You love that they've found someone in this isolation to like, keep them company, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That found family Casey loves.
I do. I love found family.
Speaking of, all these women burn the town down with Elizabeth's dragon breath and go settle in this ghost town in a town of lone women. The end. What did you guys think about that ending? Because I was like, wait, what? I did not expect a happily ever after.
I am about to sound so demented. I wanted there to be more pain and torture.
Right. I did not expect a happily ever after.
Yeah, I was like, where is the climax to my quote-unquote horror novel? Like, punish the people who have done wrong. I will accept the happy ending as an epilogue, but, like, let's have, like, a peak. I feel like the ultimate reason I didn't love this book is because I felt like there was no real, like, culmination of, like, built tension to, like, some, like, extreme climax. And that's what I really wanted. Like, that's what, again, I'm not the horror aficionado here today, but that's what I think of when I think of horror, is there's a moment where, like, the horror and the wrongness and the punishment, like, reaches its peak, and I didn't really...
Not a now docile dragon who's the mayor of their new women-only town. I was like, wait.
And loves children, and that the children all hang out with.
And the children are like, woohoo, a dragon, like, in Montana. I'm like, what is happening right now?
No, it was very, like, cut to black moment on, like, the horror moments. So it was just like, oh, yeah, like, we know that Elizabeth is going to tear the busy beast limb to limb. We don't ever see it because it cuts to black and goes to a different
perspective. It does describe about the slipperiness of the theater when they're walking back in.
Yeah, but you expect from a horror novel, not a cut to black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were spared a little, but also I was like, I don't care if I was spared.
Caitlin's not one for the gore, but I am, so.
No, I mean, like, I would have accepted it. I don't care either way, though.
Yeah, I definitely feel like just Elizabeth as a monster in general. I mean, we got a little bit of her perspective, which was interesting and unique, but I also just feel like we still didn't get enough of her as a monster. Like, I wanted to see her, if she is the personification of Adelaide's rage, I want to see her filled with rage and tearing things limb by limb. But it's another situation where I'm torn, because I love the idea of this found family finding somewhere where they can build a place that they can be themselves, like a utopia of their own where they can. But like Casey said, and not every horror movie needs a happy ending. Like that is for slashers. Slashers are where you have your happy ending most times, where like the final girl gets away safe. The killer is gone for now, not all the time. And it's like she drives off into the sunset wrapped up in her little blanket. But like, I feel like a horror story, whether that's movie, TV show, book, if it's really going to emotionally invest you, which I didn't feel emotionally invested in this story, but if it's really going to grasp you and have you invested, I don't care for a happy ending. Like, I need the body count up. I need blood spilled. And I want to feel like I lost something when I close the book, the end.
I want to bring up the random like Hispanic couple in the mountain that was like the goddess about Elizabeth.
Yes. Why did we
what
never
happened
get the
to
back
that part of the storyline?
That?
Yeah. I was like, ooh, she's really gonna end up being a goddess and like exacting her vengeance, blah blah blah. I was like,
yeah.
I thought it was a Native American couple, but that may be because of the Native American story that was being told. But it was all kind of like thrown in a bit, where I wish we had delved into more, because like we hear Miss Reed talk about this Native American idea in the story and legend of this creature picking them up and taking them to some sort of afterlife. And so it was just kind of like thrown in a bit. And I was like, we could have delved into that more of why this couple was so inclined towards Elizabeth and why they felt like that she was a goddess or some sort of divine being.
So I read it as they were like a Mexican couple who had migrated north. And so I did briefly think that they thought she was like a chupacabra. I don't know where my head was. I was like, oh, okay. She's a goddess or something, a chupacabra. And then it was like, she's a dragon. I was like, nah, I'm not, I don't know.
We're about to get roasted.
There were also just, I mean, there was one review that I considered reading, that it felt like there were a lot of things just thrown in here unfinished. And yes, that is just one of a few of
right. them, the indigenous man, Fiona's father. There were like several, I don't know, in the ghost of Sam's dad, like.
Yeah, because I understand the purpose of Fiona's father as the idea of like, so they can find a place later on in the book where it's like, good thing I've been looking at all these abandoned places so that we can find a settler's area. But at the same time, I was like, why are we here?
Yeah. And Finn and his like grandson or whatever, they were they like took up a portion of a chunk of the story. And then I feel like they just phased out and you didn't hear much from them anymore.
Well, yep. Elizabeth did try to eat him, so
you know, that's fair. Fine.
I would probably stay away at Austin.
True.
I want to hard retweet the fact that something I look for at the end of a horror novel is that sense of loss. And that is something I really wanted. Like, horror novels are, horror in general is supposed to devastate you. Like, that's what I want, is I want to feel devastated. And I didn't feel that ever. And I also want to say, like, yes, to the unfinished themes part. I think one of the biggest things that's built up and not finished is, like, why does Elizabeth exist?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when we are led to believe that, like, more than one Elizabeth is born and could exist, and why do people worship this being as a god in some cultures, whatever that culture is, and, like, you know, why? And Elizabeth was also not inherently a villain, which I think is, like, a really complex part of the book, because she's a monster but not a villain. But then we never, like, fully explore that, and so I'm kind of like, why does Elizabeth go from, like, this, like, human-eating thing to, like, the thing playing with children that agrees to, like, not eat humans, I guess? Like, it's just, like, very abrupt for me.
And hangs out with children.
Yeah, it gave, it went from, like, horror to, like, friendly Game of Thrones dragon. I don't know. It was super weird.
I'm sorry. Did you watch Game of Thrones as if those dragons were friendly? Because that
well,
is
like, not funny. None of those dragons were friendly.
They let people ride them though, and, like, control them to an extent. Anyway, I don't know. The ending probably lost a whole star for me because I was like, what the hell just happened?
Yep.
Okay, well, do we want to wrap it up and give book recommendations?
Or movie recommendations. It's also a thing we do.
We like to recommend, say we didn't like it, maybe something we would suggest instead, or say if you like this, you might also like this. Listen to our episode on Tinder is the Flesh, I would recommend. That's one that sure leaves you unsatisfied at the end.
Peak horror for sure.
You will keep thinking about it. I texted them the other day. I was like, I was eating chicken tenders, and all of a sudden I thought of our Tinder's the Flesh discussion, and then I had to throw away my chicken tender. It's like, well, that certainly stuck with me. So I'd recommend that one if you want.
Devastation, yeah. So a book I'm going to recommend is Bunny. This is kind of random. I think I've recommended it before. Bunny is, like, a sort of psychological horror about a creative writing program, and there's these very, like, sort of sorority-ish girl women, and then there's a woman who kind of, like, doesn't fit in. The reason I recommend this book is I think it does the tension part super well. Like, there's a ton of buildup. And it's, like, I think in that book, the climax is, like, I mean, it is really there. Like, it hits the high point. And so I think, to me, it, like, fulfills that feeling of horror that I didn't get from this book, where, like, by the end, there is, like, utter devastation. And it is weird, and it is gory, and it is, at the end, you're like, what the fuck just happened? I don't know, but I'm feeling feelings. And so I am going to recommend that book.
Yeah, I'm going to go along those lines because I don't read enough horror books. And the only horror books I read are for this podcast because I've been forced to. So I'm going to recommend one from last year, which is Mexican Gothic. And it's also got that, I think, does suspense a lot better. And there's that suspense and creepy old house set in the 1950s and a very strong female character.
It's also racist old white man.
Racist old white man. Yeah, no, it is racist old white man. And she's thrust into this mansion owned by an English family and trying to save her cousin from this really creepy family. And then chaos ensues, but it's very gory, very suspense ridden, and, like, a mystery of finding out why these people are fucking crazy.
I don't read horror books like this very often, so if you were interested in reading this book but after we talked about it and you're like, maybe I don't want to read it anymore, I have a show recommendation, which I already mentioned, Lovecraft Country. It has the sci-fi monster vibes to it and also the historical vibes. It takes place in the 60s in, I think it's in the South. It takes place in two different places. I think they go from North to South, and they like run into sundown towns, and like sometimes the real horror is just the Black experience in the South of America or in the United States. But if you're so much more of a book person and you're like, I would like to read some Black science fiction horror, The World Wasn't Ready for You is a short story collection, which just released in September. And it has everything you could want: devastation, goofiness, fun stories, body horror, all of it. It's in there. I interviewed the author of it. So cool. He's such a great guy. And it's a great short story collection too. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, there you have it. To summarize, sometimes the greatest evil are the people around you. And there's some more options if you want to explore that theme a little bit.
So our normal disclaimer, these are just our opinions. We want you to engage in the conversation. Hit us up at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. If you hated what we said, if we loved what we said, if you thought we missed something. And also like hit up our special guest, Avery. Do you want to like reiterate like where you're from and what you do?
Yeah. So if any of the points I made today, you're like, wow, that was really good, I want to hear more. I love to talk, and so you can hear me talk on my podcast, the Unbound and Rewound Horror Podcast. I'm on Spotify, Apple. I think they're doing away with Google Podcasts, which is so sad, but Google Podcasts, Pandora, like wherever you find podcasts besides YouTube, I am there. Also, Your Horror Podcast on every other platform: TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and Substack. You can get all of my words straight to your inbox. That is Your Horror Podcast, because it's where you get all your horror needs.
She's also better at TikTok than us.
Hell yeah.
Okay, we're so bad at TikTok.
I tell everyone, I do it on the clock. You know, I'm supposed to be working and I'm not. I get my work done at the end of the day, but I do it on the clock, and that's the only way I'm able to do as much as I can.
We won't tell.
Yeah. I appreciate your solidarity.
We do it as well. Let's be real.
Yeah. All right. Well, rate and review this podcast. Connect with us. And I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. And thanks for listening. When you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.